Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Oh gosh, I'm just weary this week.
Me too.
So, there's just stuff to do and I'm getting it done, but I want to take lots of naps.
Naps are lovely. I want to take naps too. Oh,
Yes. One of the nice things about being retired is that it's a little easier for me to do that.
but you're probably super busy now that you're retired because you get to engage in all these extra things.
I'm trying to get one of them done and to not replace it with something else. I essentially created like this internship for myself with the long-term recovery group and zone captains and the whole fire recovery thing and then trying to help out with some research on the needs assessment interviews with 400 fire survivors, which has been incredibly important and actually incredibly useful for our commission too, because now I think about things in a much broader context and
Sure.
have all that better social network and stuff. So it's actually been really useful. But I'm ready to be done. So I'm doing this qualitative analysis of the narrative section of the interviews with the 415 survivors that got done. And so it's them talking about what was your most important loss, who do you turn to for support? It's kind of the social worky part
Neat.
of the interview, but a lot of it is just so fucking sad.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's quite often, these are mostly really low income folks for the most part, who were already living just so close to the edge anyway,
Yeah.
for all sorts of reasons. The older folks in particular, I was working on this section 2 nights ago, are talking about how everything that they've worked for throughout their lives got destroyed, and they're old and they have no money and they don't know how they'll ever recover and they're afraid and the bureaucracies are overwhelming
Yeah.
and confusing and they don't always have good family support. In fact, sometimes the family's their problem.
Sure.
So it's all the stuff that social workers know. No surprise. But it's just so I'm really ready to be done with that project because that's like been in my head.
It's vicarious trauma.
It's like there's the initial trauma and then there's secondary trauma from the interviewers talking to the survivors, and then I have tertiary trauma from reading the notes taken by the interviewers.
You experience all those things that those people are experiencing, but over and over and over and over with every
Exactly.
story, it's kind of beats you down a little.
Well, and unfortunately, I'm fairly empathic.
Me too.
So
Yeah,
why
that's
people go into things like social work is difficult. Anyway, but now I'm looking forward to thinking about rent burden.
it's so and we could talk about this maybe at the meeting, but probably not because we'll never go this in far in depth. I have a hard time with these things if there is no change that occurs. And I think the thing that's hard for me is to ask for people to give of their time and themselves if we can't really produce something. And I'm never sure that we can. So it makes me a little uncomfortable to ask.
And that's been one of the good things about this long-term recovery group slash zone captains project is that these are agencies and groups that actually have, actually do produce at least some results for at least some people, actually helping them get housing and actually, helping getting this in case management to deal with all the other things. It doesn't get to everybody, but it does get to a chunk. And so that makes it a little bit more survivable. But yeah, I am going to ask if you, Linda, if you and Jove had any conversation about heat sheltering.
Fluffy tail.
Because it's technically it's going to be hot enough to trigger heat sheltering this weekend.
Yeah, it's it keeps trending up and up and up. And, you know, earlier in the week, it was not that bad, but now it's gotten worse. So Joe is actually out of town. And when he left, it was not going to be this hot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess we will.
We need to be able to tell people at least we're. What buildings would other, you know, public other or otherwise might be open for people to get in out of the heat over the weekend.
I might I'll reach out to Sabrina tomorrow because I'm sure she's acting in his absence and then see what she thinks. And I mean, it'll probably just be what we were doing for winter shelter too, which would be, you know, Pioneer Hall, maybe, unless there's something else that.
Well, for daytime heating,
Heidi,
you know, the options.
Go ahead about Pioneer Hall. Do you know something we don't know, Heidi?
It's not. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not air conditioned.
It has no air conditioning?
No.
Oh, God. So we need to find out if the library, the public library, is going to be open.
That's a good question.
The senior center is a possibility. The Grove is another possibility. I don't know.
SOU had cooling shelters at their spot last time.
Yeah.
Right. I think for me, it highlights that the city council has had a study session about this a month ago, and it's still not scheduled that I know of. And one might think that it takes time, but really all they have to do is look at the recommendations and say yes. Doesn't require any thinking on their part besides reading and do it. And if we have an issue this time, it's because the council failed to do something very simple. That's my view.
When I was in that role of organizing it, we had a backup for when the city manager wasn't there. There was a chain of command, an alternate person that I just had to contact Parks and Rec to get a location. And once we had the location, then it was my job to get the volunteers and get the word out. So I don't know what they've set up, if they set up anything.
Well, if we do it that way, we're doing it the old ad hoc, let's just find out who can volunteer way. And the reason that we had the other thing is because there's a whole number of things that we need to consider in terms of communication and all those coordination and being able to analyze all of that is built in, and it's a year later. It's over a year later from the last time we had a health care emergency, and here we are. We still haven't, and it isn't because we didn't do our job. It's because the council hasn't done their job, and there doesn't seem to be any urgency on their part of doing it. So if we had a council liaison, we could lay it on them. But anyway, that's my frustration on it.
Well, we do. I think she'll be here, but we need to get a.
You could also contact the mayor. That's not. I mean, she said in our last meeting. It's. I'm sure it's not a problem to contact her and ask what's up.
Now's
the time.
Well, and I think part of it too is, you know, they've had a lot of special meetings, and then they've had a lot of things that they keep putting on their agenda that are, you know, not this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, how do we, timing wise, with the weather and the smoke, I mean, thank God we don't have any smoke, and hopefully we won't. But I mean, it's the time is now to get this done because we're in it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. And I will. So I'll talk to Sabrina, who's attorney, deputy city manager. And she's the one who would make the determination And then I guess we'll just do the old way for Saturday. And it may be that what ends up happening is if there are things that are open already, like the library, the, you know, I'll touch base with them. So we may not have to do a full thing, but I'm not sure.
And I don't think anything at SOU is going to be open over a weekend because it's summer. So I know the library's closed. And probably
the SOU
library. Yeah. So that's closed. I doubt that the student union is open on weekends during the summer. It would mean getting in touch with I guess probably Greg Perkinson, or probably he would be the top tier administrator for this.
Well, and I think we'll start with Parks and see if we can get a facility through them, because that would be easy because it's internal.
We at least need a list of places where people can go during the heat of the day, and then we need to have a way to get that list out to the masses, preferably with a Nixle alert, so that means tie.
Also, you need a volunteer coordinator to organize the volunteers. All that.
We don't have one.
Well, we sort of do.
Yeah. But it's whether he's available.
We're
paying him or anything.
But I'm just looking at the weather, and it's supposed to be 100 degrees on Sunday and 102 on Monday and 90 tomorrow. And so we're getting there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll be right back, you guys.
Okie doke. Hi, Linda Rapond.
Hi.
I have a quick question. There was a comment about the city having a coordinator and who that person would be, and it's a guy, but who would that be?
We don't know. That we have the person who would call a shelter, which would be the city manager or the assistant city manager, but we don't, right. The rest of the processes have never been created.
They haven't been created. Avram coordinate.
That's what I wanted to know, and thank you for answering my question.
Yeah,
I have worked closely with him, and whatever it's worth, I would like to have a private discussion about my thoughts about that being your point person.
No, he's just who's volunteered to do it currently.
I know that.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that I would like to have a private conversation about him being a point person to go to, so that I am not negligent in reporting some things that you should be aware of. So that's all I'll say about it. And my question was super simple, and I don't want that falling back as a liability on the city. So, thank you.
Yeah.
It's 4 o'clock, but I think we're going to wait a minute for Linda to return and to see if we get a couple more commissioners. Happy to say summer has arrived in Ashland.
Full force.
I'm happy. I may be complaining a week from now, but right now I'm really happy to see summer arrive. Have you heard, Linda, whether Gina or Kathy Colley is going to be here?
Didn't hear from Kathy, or did I? Maybe a while back. Was it this meeting? Was it last meeting?
I call that COVID brain.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe I can look, but I did hear from Gina, and she emailed me about an hour ago. So I believe she's going to be here.
Okay, great.
So Kathy missed the last meeting.
Okay.
And because I just looked really quick at the minutes. And what's our rule about how many misses people have?
That's a good question. There's
such not a hard rule.
Yeah, there is something, but there is a, it could be excused absences. I think it's if you don't show up and you don't email three, I think it's three. Yeah. Okay. So, and Kathy may have, but I think it might've been a couple of weeks ago, maybe, that she let me know, but that might've been last meeting. It's all running together in my mind. Sorry, but
No problem.
Liz keeps track of it because strangely we have to give it to the city recorder, the attendance. And you know, it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal, although we have had a couple of really absentee members who remember that one guy who we thought he was going to be so great. He was a young guy and he literally ghosted us.
Wouldn't return emails, nothing.
Yes, he like disappeared. It was terrible. And it's like, but somebody else could have a seat and contribute, you know. So anyway, it's only happened a couple times. We've had to ask people to like give up their seats so someone else can have it.
And have we lost Reese for the summer?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. She can't vote on anything anyway. So
all right. Well then I'm gonna call us to order. Let's get moving. Should we start with approving the minutes of the last meeting?
I found a boo-boo. So down towards the bottom, there's a list of dates coming up someplace. I think was at the bottom. I can't find it really fast. It's the upcoming dates. There we go. It says Housing Production Strategy Meeting, July 7th. It's actually July 11th.
Oh. And I should tell you that Liz's microphone is not working. So she can talk to us in the chat, but I can see her nodding her head. She's hearing us, but you just won't hear from her.
Okay.
Unless it's in the chat.
It's the silent Liz.
And the other small correction is on June 6th, the first line of that section, City Council study season on severe weather. It should be session.
Any other corrections? Motion to approve is corrected.
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Done. Do we have anybody ready to do public forum?
I'm looking right now. I always forget that I have that. There we go. No, there are no attendees.
All right.
And well, it wasn't on the agenda again, by the way.
Oh gosh. It's because I copied it over from last month's agenda where it wasn't before.
Where it wasn't before. Hello, Gina. So I just want to say this has been a very busy month for many people on this commission. And I just want to say a huge thank you for the people who've been doing tabling, for Joy, who has like stepped up big time, for all of the people who are doing all the things. Do you have clothes on, Gina?
I do have clothes on.
Just checking.
I was in a hurry. No, I'm kidding.
You can make these meetings a lot more interesting.
Maybe it's a good thing
from the minutes.
It's a good thing that our meetings don't show up on YouTube. The other commissions do.
Yes.
But ours don't.
If I were on more parade.
So maybe it's a good thing.
Maybe it's a good thing. So Joy, yes, could you give us an update on the East Main Shelter?
Well, it's an older building. It has significant issues with well and a septic field. The roof needs to be replaced. There's I mean, I'm assuming it's structurally sound, but remediation work has to happen. Some of you may have heard the story about why I didn't have an oven out here. And that was because when Rogue Retreat took over the shelter, it was in the middle to last year. And sadly, they didn't clean the oven before they turned it on because they were going to make Thanksgiving dinner, and promptly roasted a family of rats and mice that had been inside that stove. Yeah. So they brought in another one. And then when they departed, Rogue Retreat took it with them and sadly didn't tell me, but did say that they felt that it would be the owners of the church's responsibility to provide another stove because they let rats go in there or something to that ridiculous effect. So thanks to Echo, I got like a desk, not a desktop, but like a little
hot plate
thing. Yeah. So that works really well in the interim. We are down to 5 people. So that's great. Four of the pallet shelters are vacant. Yeah, so the fence is still here, thank goodness. That had been, sadly, Rogue Retreat had called and told them to come and remove it the following Monday. And it's a good thing that Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice contacted them because they were on their way over to remove it. So that's a good thing. Oh, my word. So the air conditioners in the units work really well. They did have, sadly in the building, they didn't have working smoke detectors. I don't know why that was, but like 2 out of the 3 didn't have batteries in them. And the one that was so wouldn't even work. So, you know, just incidental stuff that is just more of a disappointment, I guess. Everybody's been really grateful to have the extra time. They've been meeting much more regularly now with caseworkers there on housing. I found out that, you know, the remaining 5 people here have been here for 7 months. And out of that 7 months, everyone has told me that they had 1 initial intake meeting with Rogue Retreat, and that was it. 1 time in 7 months. So that's worth hearing. If you're not hearing me, it's worth hearing. Joe and I went out to the property how many Fridays ago, Linda? Oh my gosh, like my world is melding together. Like 2 Fridays ago, maybe? And the plan was that we were supposed to be meeting with Rogue Retreat executives or whomever, do a walkthrough of the property and sign over the lease and whatnot. And Joe and I were here at 4 and there was no show. We were the only people out here. We did not have a key. We did not have combinations. We did not have the patients or the clients here that worked with them. They didn't have their case files. I didn't know their names. They were sitting out there unsupervised from 3 o'clock until Joe and I got there at 4. So they were busy hustling to get out. And so the transition has been horrible. I mean, yeah, they took the toilet paper holder rolls off of the stalls. They took paper towel holder rolls off the walls. They are taking doorknobs out of the door. So I don't have a lot of really good things to say right now that are supportive. I'm sure there are some, but I don't have them at the moment. The five people that remain, one is an elderly woman. She's pretty frail, and she got hit, car and shopping cart, and fractured her pelvis and really hurt her. She was in the hospital for quite a while, and now she's back and, you know, teetering around with a walker. She does now have home help that comes to see her 3 times a week, which is super great. I'm glad that held in. Let's see. There's a mom with two boys. One of them has a regular full-time job at Wendy's. So he's back by 9. The other lady, she's a struggling addict. She's in recovery. She's just a really hardcore result of having to live on the streets. And so she's been working especially hard with Aura to hopefully find something out of nothing, but hoping. So that's kind of the status on the PEEP.
Are you having enough volunteer support and meal support and things like that?
I definitely have good meal support. That's really awesome. What I don't have are volunteers, you know. So I've been 24/7-ing it, well, since the beginning. So it's unfortunate that, you know, between COVID and the crisis that we find ourselves in every day with GoFundMe this and a fire survivor that, and putting in overtime, volunteers are tired, they're burnt out, you know, and it's just sad. And there's an aging population, you know. I mean, some days they're just like, no, and I can't blame them. So, same situation. I'm not unfamiliar with it.
Heidi.
I just wanted to say that when we set up 2082, Trinity Episcopal donated all the appliances, a refrigerator and a stove. I think they actually ended up donating 2 stoves because the first one didn't work well or something. So technically all the appliances belong to Aura, because that's who was holding the contract at that point in time. And I
might let them know that, because they're, you know.
Yeah. I don't, how did it happen that, I think it's wonderful that you've taken on trying to supervise it, but how did it happen? How did Rogue Retreat end up leaving so suddenly, and that just leaving everything?
Well, we had at a community meeting, one where many of my colleagues on this commission were at, Mayor Akins, Joe Lessard, Chad from Rogue Retreat, some people from Aura, and there was a discussion to be had, and it was around Rogue Retreat's ending their commitment early with the city of Ashland, under the guise of they were short, they ran out of funding to pay their staff.
Right.
So that's how we got here.
But they just left.
They just left. They just didn't, they just left, and they gave people 5 days notice and say, you either relocate to one of our current facilities in Medford, or you're back out on the street. And may I also, for the record, just so that we're all remembering when we go to approve for funding, Rogue Retreat did not find any of these people that I can tell any real housing. You know what they did? They shuttled them between the little tiny house community, Hope Village, and the Kelly Shelter, and their Medford Urban Campground. So there's that.
So is Rogue Retreat continuing to pay the lease?
No. The lease was transferred into the 501c3, the Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice, under whose liability umbrella I'm under. Okay. And so they will pay for the lease, and I believe the city will reimburse them for that. And last heard it was $1,250. And the fence rental is $325 a month. And the utility bill, while they quoted at that Friday meeting that their utilities run around $700 a month, my sense is that it would be much less, simply because I'm not taking on new clients. I'm not taking in anybody. So the use of indoors, you know, just today I turned on the air for a little while, but generally speaking, I haven't even, you know, turned the air on or overhead lights on much at all. So that cost will be less.
Other questions?
I had my hand up there.
I'll see it up there. Sorry, Rich. Go ahead.
I'll take it down. I just want to remind us that within the city council, there was a vote to basically continue with Rogue Retreat, because we divided the funding between Rogue Retreat and ORA. But that vote really came within a slim decision of saying that I think a majority of the council wanted to say, we only want one program in Ashland. Now, I disagree with that, but I think that is, if you went back and talked to where that was coming from, I think that's probably still the case at this point. And we'll have to see. But my question is really about the 10 pallet shelters. And it seems to me that we're going to have to, by fall, no later, we're going to have spaces for those.
That would be much earlier. The deadline they have to be moved is July 31st.
July 31st.
That's the drop dead date.
Right. And so it doesn't seem to me that it's Joy or Jobs with Justice job to do that. It's basically the city's job to do that. And yep. I was just wondering, you know, we did have a discussion at the interfaith church groups, and they had only modest suggestions, and I'm not going to go into the details of that, but I would say that the question is, that shouldn't be dumped on Linda either. Is there any other kind of way in which we're endeavoring to either store them or use them as places for people?
Gina.
Those are good questions. Enjoy. Thank you so much. The other day I did go by the shelter. I did meet with Joy, and I met with Jobs with Justice, and I saw the dilemmas firsthand, and it's real. And more importantly, July the 15th, I think we have to be relocated, if I'm right, Joy. And so something that we looked at other possibilities where we might be able to take these five individuals where they are now And I really like what Jobs with Justice came up with, three different scenarios for now. And one, which I did reach out to Rabbi David over at Temple, over at the Temple Havra. And I emailed him also. Okay. His email came back. He's gone. But he will be back next week. And so I reached out to him. I also had a conversation with Doug Newman, because I had a conversation with him about something else. Doug Newman is the owner of Ashland Hills Hotel and Suites. As you all know, at the when we were at the Alameda fires and all that good stuff, the doors were open for us. So when I talked to Doug, well, Doug is Doug. God bless him. And so I was kind of referred to speak to my general manager. My general manager is the one who opened the doors for us when we were in the middle of Alameda. And so I reached out to him. He's he had COVID, but he's much, much better. We were on the phone today. We did talk about something that Vanessa was telling me about. Was she is meeting with Deanne Everson over at United Way. And then there's Columbia Care, All Care, Jackson Care Connect, and even DHS. Because she, Vanessa called up Ashland Hills and was quoted $1,500 a month to be able to stay in the apartments in the back. And I, you know, that's the going rate for people, everybody. And I'm like, no, this is for us. And so I emailed my boss. And one thing, Vanessa did give me all the information about the five people who are right now at the shelter and their situation and their status. The mom with the two working with the two boys, one of which is working, the woman who was hit and is really in bad shape. And we need to house these people in a safe place. So my hope is that my boss will be forthcoming and willing to work with us. So I'm just gonna keep pushing that, holding on to hope. The deadline is my concern. You know, that deadline is my concern. And so Vanessa's meeting with Deanne today, I mean, tomorrow at 3:15. I have reached out, even if we could maybe look at the back of the temple that Joy had mentioned. I drove by there yesterday at Havara. There's a lot, a nice big parking lot. The children are not in school right now. It would really take care of the four pallet shelters. And if not, we have Ashland Hill. So plan A and B. And we're going to pray for that and more too shall be revealed. I'll be back at you.
Thank you, Gina.
Linda, and then Heidi.
Does anyone know if they have or are anticipating any vacancies at the Unitarian Pallet Shelter community?
The ones over there are, you know, I mean, yeah, they're movable, but they're really hunkered in space. I can't see them taking any more. They have three out there already.
Oh yeah, no, not to take more, but just I don't know if they have anybody moving out, because they've had some people cycle through, and I just wonder if we could transition people into one of those.
That would be a good, very good question to ask.
I'll reach out to Diane and just check.
Oh, would you? That would be terrific. If you'd let me know, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Linda.
Uh-huh. It would be great too, Gina, if I'm thank you for reaching out to the Havra, because they're the other church that, well, one of three that has an approval for overnight parking program.
Sure. Heidi.
So when I toured Eugene a number of years ago, they had tiny shelters, two on each church lot in the whole community. They had churches often have large parking lots. And so I wonder if there's a possibility of more churches. It would be sad to lose these pallet shelters. to have them leave our community.
I doubt that would happen. I really seriously, based on my conversations with Joe Lassar and Mayor Akins, they're not leaving Ashland.
Good. And then the other thing I thought of is the city has that utility lot for equipment yard, I think they call it. And if nothing else, we could at least store them, park them there. And then there's that new land that's out in the, basically in the county by the treatment plant. I don't know what they call that big piece of land where they put equipment now, but that's another place they could be stored.
People to live in them would be nice instead of them being in storage.
It would be, but I just don't want to lose them.
Right.
And I wonder if it would be possible to have pallet shelters placed around Ashland and then have one or two people that go around and check on people each day and make sure everything's okay.
What about if we approach small businesses and said, hey, would you like to host a pallet?
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of, like, I don't know if you'd do it in a brewery, but, you know, I mean, there are some, how cool would that be?
So, yeah,
there are more homespun solutions that we're not thinking out of the box, you know? Maybe a group of faith leaders, sponsors,
This is...
Gina, let me get Gina first and then Rich.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I have a quick question for Linda Reed. So Linda, you said a few minutes ago that Havara is one of the places that has been approved for pallet homes. So are there any other ones? I love what Heidi mentioned, what she brought up. So if there are any other ones that have been approved, I'm more than happy to reach out to them also. We already have the Unitarian has three. We have a total of 10. And I think it is less of a burden for a church to take on all of them. But I love the idea of two and being spread out. Are there any other faith-based communities that have been approved?
Yes, one. It is the Presbyterian Church.
Just the Presbyterian in Havara?
And the Unitarians. So those are all the three churches that went through the overnight parking program administrative process, but any church could. There, Diane Werich has asked the city council and city staff if we could amend the existing overnight camping approval process to include private businesses, but right now it does not include that. And the state has updated their language, their legislation, to allow up to six, whereas when we adopted it, it only allowed three. So each church really is only allowed three, or each. Yeah. So far, what our resolution allows is churches and up to three, and then they provide bathroom facilities.
Mm-hmm. And was that, was Diane's for car camping or?
So here's the interesting thing. During the pandemic, we took a liberal interpretation of the word vehicle and applied it to a movable pallet shelter.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily that it is approved for pallet shelters. It's approved for things that can be moved.
Okay. And, you know, I'll look back at that and I'll bring that back to council because it's just unfinished business.
Okay. Rich is up and then Joy.
Well, I would just say approaching the faith communities. There was a discussion at a meeting amongst a number of representatives from congregations, and they weren't jumping at it. they identified by size of parking lots or other things, ones that might be sort of amenable to it, but it wasn't them. And so, but I guess in my point, I think that this is going to have to be someone from the city who approaches each faith community based on what they think might happen, because those faith communities are going to have to be given a lot of assurance about a number of things, just like the Unitarians did. They're not just going to go, oh, sure, just drop them on in here, because of the way that people who are in there are going to be need to be protected, serviced, and all of that. And so I don't think it should be Linda. So the question would be, who can do that, unless Linda wants to volunteer? But it's a lot of work to approach prospective faith communities. Just to get in touch with them isn't easy. And then to find the right person, and then to run through the process, and then hopefully find how they get it through their congregation isn't a simple process. So we need to figure out a way that the city takes that responsibility without necessarily dumping it on Linda.
Okay, Joy.
I just want to caution us. We have a really obvious situation where there are allegations of mixing religion with care of vulnerable people. So I think we all need to just remember and be cognizant of mixing.
So I just wanted to comment that my memory is when I toured the services in Eugene, that it was not just churches, but there were businesses who were taking what I think were Conestoga tiny houses as opposed to pallet shelters, but essentially the same size thing, with big reports that it deterred theft, that they just having somebody on the grounds was actually really helpful to the business. So that's something that could be promoted. I would certainly be willing to go to the chamber meeting on Friday and put it out there and ask people. But at this point, we would need the council to say it's okay for it to be a business.
Worth an ask.
I think I recall also that in Eugene, they had porta potties for when there were two of them, they had porta potties on the site, and that decreased the impact on the office people,
right?
Which I think was an issue at Unitarian.
Chris has his hand up too.
Chris.
Just something to also make aware to all the commissioners is we do have SOU as part of that transitional piece as well. With many students gone for the summer, I could foresee maybe some dorms that could maybe be utilized, might be available while we're looking for places to put the shelters. Just also, you know, SLU has, of course, plenty of land, and I don't know what that looks like, but I just want to make that aware of that as well.
Absolutely.
Are the old dorms air conditioned for like an emergency heat shelter?
I believe it was because we utilized those during the fire and in the summer. So I would say yes, but that's something we need to check into.
So Heidi, I think SOU is unlikely to be of much help based on our experience over the last 18 months. Just saying, and I won't go into any details because Joy's got her hand up.
Oh, no, I don't. Never mind.
Okay, sorry.
But I think we're unlikely to get to complete solution today, but there's a lot of things that have bubbled up in this conversation that I think are valuable. And I do see Gina taking notes on things to follow up on. But at the moment, it's falling to Gina and Linda, unless somebody else is ready to volunteer. All right. I would like to move on to the Community Outreach Plan Work Group update. Rich, can you lead that conversation?
Well, I think Echo can give it, we've had a meeting and we've got a plan.
Right.
And we've got a survey, which is the key piece that we need.
Right.
And Echo redid a draft survey that Brandon did, and I just went over it. I think it's great. I don't, you know, but I think our job today should be to see if we can approve of the survey, which is kind of critical for doing the outreach. And because it's still going to take a period of time to put the survey into a form, like is it on a tablet or whatever that we can use. So Echo, why don't you just tell them what you got?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to, hang on, keep talking for a minute, Rich, because I got to get a document open before I can share. And I need to do a screen share, and I'm having to click through a bunch of screens right now. So talk for another minute.
I would say it's sort of based off of Coos Bay, but it's better. But the difficulty with it in my mind is that it's 4 pages.
Right.
But it is very simple 4 pages. So it's really like 4 questions in some ways. I mean, some of them, the last page, you really kind of have to think about. But other than that, it's just kind of check some boxes down the way. So it's really something that you could do in 5 minutes, but for more, if you're really into it, 10 minutes. But I think that's what we have to think about, is what is the ease in which people can partake of it. But I think the questions are good. And if we wait too long, we lose the value that we have this summer of doing outreach. Because it's harder to do the outreach without the survey, my final words.
So I took what Brandon sent out, not to everybody in this group, but to a few of us, sent out a version of a survey, and it's Brandon's original version that you've got in your packet for today. So what I've got up on share screen right now is how I edited that to make it, I tweaked it to make it sound a little bit more conversational. There seemed to be a section in his draft that was a bit repetitive. So what you see on the screen is a little bit different from what you've got in your packet for today. I did share this version of the document with Linda Reed and I think with Joy and Rich too. And I got some feedback on this version, on my version. I got feedback from Brandon, made some additional tweaks to it after getting his feedback. So that's been the process. So it is 4 pages, and that worries me too. But I think what Brandon's idea here, and it makes sense, is to try to get some feedback on what will actually end up being in the housing production strategy, which will end up being a menu of strategies that the city may or may not decide to implement or to list in the housing production strategy, which will have to be completed in 2023. So the introduction here just kind of goes through the background for what a housing production strategy is, and that it's required by state law, and that getting input from citizens is required and necessary. And then asking people, please help us out by answering the questions below. Now, where we do this and with whom and in what setting and who's going to be administering it, that I don't know yet. So the implementation is still to be determined. So it starts off asking people, what kind of housing do you currently have? And that includes being unhoused or living in transitional or temporary housing. Asking people how long they've lived in Ashland. which the following best describes your current housing situation, so not necessarily what's desirable. But it includes a response option to say that they don't have stable or regular shelter. And then there's a list. So some of this list of barriers to renting or buying housing came from Brandon's version of the survey, and then I tweaked it some based on the survey we did with ESOU students in May. And so the option here is to select all that apply. This could go online. I think Brandon said there's a way to do that, to make it a web-based survey. So price range, size, too big, too small, that they need permanent housing, but they can't find the right amount of time. They're having financing requirements, particularly for home buyers. There's multiple bidding wars happening, so people lose out because of bidding wars. We know that there are stories of having multiple rental applicants and people losing out on rentals because they've got people competing. Then there are people being denied rentals due to problem with credit history, prior evictions, not being able to afford application fees, and not being able to afford the requirement for first, last, and deposit. And that's incredibly common. Actual discrimination, people who feel that they've been discriminated against due to all the Fair Housing Council stuff that we've talked about in this committee before. I tossed in something here that Brandon didn't have in his survey. With pets are really an obstacle to housing. People need their animals. And sometimes if forced to choose between having housing and having their animal, they'll choose to have their animal first. So that's something that I added that's definitely different from Brandon's original version. Then there's kind of a perception question of which of the following barriers, which one of the following barriers do people think is the biggest problem in Ashland? So I didn't change this a whole lot from Brandon's original version. I tweaked the language a little bit, but it kind of repeats the previous questions. So it's the biggest problem. So it's just like pick one, not more than one. Price range, right size, time, financing, et cetera, or pets. And that's either for getting homes for purchase or homes to rent. I will tell you that having pets, the pet rules are a particularly difficult obstacle for a lot of folks. That page breaks in a funny place. Sorry about that. As you can tell, I'm one of these people that likes to have her little paragraph marks on. It's a very old-fashioned of me, but I like to see my formatting. So I hope that's not distracting to people. Too many people. Then there's asking people to rank from least to most important, or it actually should be from most to least. I just realized I need to clean up that phrasing. Let's call that from most to least important to you, where one is most important. I believe there's 9 on the list. 9 is least important. Which of the following issues are most or least important to you? So I just put these in alphabetical order. Accessibility, cost to rent, discrimination, energy efficiency, thinking about the climate impact side of this issue, housing type, a workforce housing option, or having safe, healthy, and well-maintained housing without rats in the oven, for example.
Yeah.
And then kind of getting at, you know, one of the traditional sort of polarizing issues in Ashland has always been the people who feel like there's been too little growth because we need more new construction versus the no growth, no more building side. And that's an old division in the community. And then here's the menu of, I believe I got it down to 18 menu items, and this is based on the options at the back of the housing capacity analysis. So Heidi, some of this will seem familiar to you from last summer. I did toss in a couple of additional things, but it's basically that list. So it's asking people to what their perception is of whether or not these strategies would make a significant positive difference, if it would make only some difference, or three, if they think it would make very little difference. Brandon's original version asked people to like have like five options here, and that was kind of too many, so I got it down to three because I thought it was simpler on people's brain. So this gets super nerdy, and I worry about people not really having the time or patience to think about each of these carefully, but here they are. So allowing more infill, having areas zoned for multifamily housing, which in fact we're already encouraging that. Building new housing types on city-owned land, creating policy that supports construction of different types of homes. Some of the, you know, people keep finding cool examples on the internet and will ask, why can't we have more yurts in town? Or why can't we have more dome houses? Or why can't we have more tiny homes? Or why can't we have more 3D printed homes like the New Spirit development that Barry Calden is in the midst of trying to get going up in Medford? Why can't we do these other cool things that other cool cities can do? Why aren't we doing them here? So that's why that question is there. One possibility, and I added this one with sort of without Brandon's permission, is what's called a vacancy tax or an empty dwelling fee. And Portland apparently has actually looked at this. And I don't know what happened to it, but I found some documents online that it actually was, there was actually a staff report from their planning division about it. So it would put a tax or a fee, both words get used, a tax or a fee on housing that's unoccupied for long periods of time and not out on the market. So this would be the second home, the vacation home that just sits vacant most of the year. And if it's gonna sit vacant, fine, but pay. And that's designed to encourage people to put things out on the market in some capacity. The construction excise tax is one strategy that's a tax, and it's called a tax, on certain new residential or commercial construction permits, and then use that revenue to support affordable housing and shelter needs. There are some upsides and downsides to those, obviously, but it's there. That's on the menu. Expanding the urban growth boundary so that we can annex more land, because land is one of the factors that inhibits construction. Reducing the numbers of required parking spaces. This is already something that comes up in every planning application that I ever listen to online. Looking for additional funding sources for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund beyond what we currently have, and certainly probably trying to maintain it, that funding, by not moving the cannabis tax into the general fund, which worries me. Putting limits on the number of vacation rentals. This is a hot topic over on the coast, perhaps more than here. More mixed use buildings. That's again, something that's already been in the works throughout Ashland. Promoting larger apartment buildings with more units per acre or taller multi-story buildings. Again, this has already been considered in a lot of planning applications, some of which don't really end up getting approval, but it comes up already. This is Gina's issues, using surplus city-owned land, or selling it perhaps, and then using the proceeds from those sales to fund strategies for constructing more affordable housing. So that might mean selling parts of B Street. Finding ways to support and fund nonprofit organizations that help people find and pay for housing. So Access or OBRA, but help people with coming up with first and last sort of rental support. Support and funding nonprofit organizations who actually build new housing. The example there would be Habitat oh gosh, what's that other organization that does that, Rich? Anyway.
NeighborWorks Umpqua.
Yeah, thank you. Or whatever else might do it. CASA of Oregon buying property to put a mobile home park on, which is happening up in Talent, but not here in Ashland. Supporting and funding organizations that serve unhoused populations, we already do that. Supporting the development of new manufactured home parks. I think if Kathy were here, she would be supporting that one. Support the purchase of property by the city to be used for affordable housing, and putting it into a land bank or a land trust. And then sort of an open-ended any other ideas that people might have. So this is long, but it does reflect what will end up showing up in that housing production strategy draft that that Eco Northwest is walking us all through. So before I stop sharing, does anybody want me to go back and look at any of this?
Just remind me again, when we're marking 1, 2, or 3, is 3 the best or the worst?
I made it. It could go either way. Well, I made number 1 the best.
Well, let me
and
just,
number 3 the very little. But it could be reversed. It doesn't really matter.
Let me just say that if we are, isn't it right if you didn't vote on it, because at the bottom says you don't have to vote on it, right?
Right.
So if you have that a non-vote, if you're just totaling the numbers, the non-vote becomes a 0. Mm-hmm. And so you'd be better to have the 3 being the best, because that way it measures more accurately what people want if you're counting zeros in it. The highest score is the best.
And I was kind of thinking about it in terms of my number 1 choice would be.
But you're adding up the numbers at the end to see what is best or worst. And so the lowest score would be the best, and a highest score would be the worst. If you reverse it, the one that you really like will have the highest score.
Yeah. Does anybody else have a feeling about this? What is more or less confusing with this?
Could you take down the screen share so we could see people?
Sure.
Okay. Questions, comments, Gina?
Actually, I kind of understand what Rich is going with it, because when you add it all up, the highest, and you know, number 3, everybody likes it. And then you're going to have it written on there. 1 is 4, 2, 3. So yeah, that'll make sense. But so I had a quick question on the screen share that I saw around when you had taxing. I think it was taxing new buildings.
It's called a construction excise tax. And in the housing capacity analysis from last summer, if you look at the appendix at the end of that long document, there is a menu of strategies that cities have used to deal with the housing crisis. So Eco Northwest in the current housing production strategy meetings is working with that very same menu. And asking those of us on the working group to talk about those strategies from our various and sundry perspectives. So the construction excise tax option is there because Eco Northwest has it on their menu.
If you remember, that was the strategy that the city of Bend used.
Correct.
They did a 1% excise tax and then used that money to build workforce and affordable housing.
Like 10 or 11 cities, including Medford and Grants Pass, have it.
And we do have a construction excise tax in Ashland already that goes to the school district. It's in a little bit of a different legal category than this kind, but it's basically the same idea. So it's not unheard of, in other words.
Yeah, I read about that, and actually Rich brought that to my attention. And my thing is that I've been working with some people who are wanting to come in and wanting to build, but there's already so much cost on SDCs and tax and permits that they're being weighed down with so much. I love the idea of taking the money and directing it for affordable housing, but tacking on one more tax, one more thing, when we're not being flexible. I mean, I was just blown away with some of the things that people have shared with me. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to go.
Well, and it's something
I know that Medford's doing it, and I'm not trying to say, no, don't do it. It's just, I wanted to share with you some of the experiences that I have heard. And also I thought about, so many people are moving here and there's a tax for that one-time buyer. You buy a house and we could tax them and put the money towards affordable housing.
Rich is shaking his head.
Well, if you put a rent tax, it's illegal, and we wanted it, but you can't get it in Oregon completely, never, because the real estate people buried it. And I would just say that one of the most key sentences in the capacity study said that 40% of the people in Ashland are severely overburdened or cannot afford their housing.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's right. The other groups of people, there's 30% that are in the upper income people. There, if a developer wants to come in and say, that's what I want to build, I don't give a shit. That, I mean, if we put another 1% on them, it does not matter. And we can keep out from the construction all the affordable housing by nonprofits that we do. So just, I'm really, that's where I'm going to be really emotional, but I don't care if it puts a 1% on somebody that says, well, I can't come in and build a $500,000 house. That's my view.
I understand. I get it. I know you're passionate.
Yeah, Gina, in the back of the housing capacity analysis from last summer, there is, and I can't tell you offhand exactly which page it's on, but I looked at it again. There is sort of a longer discussion that describes how that can be structured in a way that doesn't put a burden on people building affordable or lower income housing, that you can kind of target it at certain sort of price points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their downside to that particular proposal is it works well in larger cities where there's a lot of construction happening. And it may or may not be a revenue generator in the same fashion in Ashland. But this is something the city council will have so much fun talking about when, when it finally gets to you guys. Linda Reed's got her hand up.
Linda.
So the city has already done a lot of work on construction excise tax, and the only reason that we can do it is because the state allows it now. And when the state passed that legislation, they did say that affordable housing developments would be exempt, so they would not be required to pay a construction excise tax. When the city of Medford adopted it, they went through a pretty lengthy process, which included a lot of developer feedback. And part of the way the legislation is structured at the state level, which Rich probably can speak to you better than I can, is that part of the funding that you collect has to go back to the developers to help them pay SDCs.
Correct.
So it isn't, while they may be receiving or being taxed on, and it's usually the value added, and then you take a portion of that and you pay their SDCs with it. So the Medford developers were actually pretty in favor of it. And I think there's probably a lot of, literature from those hearings and through that process with the city that we could look at. So when the state legislation first passed, the city did a lot of work to look at how would this look in the city, how much revenue would it generate. There were a lot of city council study sessions where that information was brought forward in council communications so that the city council could see what if we only applied it to commercial developments, what if we did it for residential and commercial, like could based on how many, what the valuation is of the commercial developments that have happened in a given year over a course of several years versus
you know, residential developments and what does that actually look like? And at the time, the council felt like it would be a deterrent and did not move forward.
Okay, I have a question. Are you wanting this kind of input on this questionnaire? Are you looking for a decision from the commission about approving it?
Well, I don't know that's exactly a decision. I guess what I'd like is feedback, maybe via email.
Okay.
Linda Reed, can you make sure that everybody's got this version?
Yeah,
in their email boxes.
Yeah, I'll mail it out. And certainly I think that, what we talked about in the smaller group was that if you guys had any wordsmithing or any suggestions right. for ease of readability or ease of, conducting the survey, because right. this group would also be putting out the call to all of you when those opportunities to conduct this survey right. arise, whether it be through a tabling event or through some sort of canvassing event, or just reaching out to the groups that you are all maybe in touch with. So it should be something that you guys feel is comfortable and appropriate for a variety of people.
Yeah. And what we haven't figured out is the logistics of, so where are we going to do this survey and who's going to do it and on what dates? And so we have a meeting scheduled, Rich and I and Joy. If she has time, I hate to ask you to do anything else, by the way, kiddo, I totally get it.
Because I'm really here 24/7.
Okay. And then Linda Reed. So we have a meeting scheduled for noon on July 11th, I believe, something like that. And I think we'll try to figure out the where and what and who, of this survey. So feedback would be great. I'll flip-flop the direction on that 1-3 thing.
Heidi.
I didn't see a question about the cost of utilities, but Aura and St. Vincent every month are overwhelmed by the number of people that are renting that are unable to pay the high cost of utilities. And I think that I know it's just the cost of living here, but if we're talking about rent burden and what's making it hard for people, there might perhaps should be a question about that.
Well, this isn't a rent burden study, survey. It's a housing production survey.
Oh, okay.
So it's really, so it doesn't get into it costs too much to rent here.
Okay.
So the rent burden is maybe the next thing on the agenda.
It's the next thing on the agenda. So what I'm understanding is that you're wanting people to email in any input, any feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. And I look forward to the city council discussion of construction excise taxes whenever this final report comes to you, which I think happens in January of 2023, if I remember the timeline. Might be a little sooner than that. You guys are going to have fun with this. The study, by the way, just to remind people, this is the consultants running this is Eco Northwest under a grant that the city received from the Department of Land Conservation and Development. So the city got funded to hire the consultant. Is that correct, Linda? Did I get that right?
Yay.
Okay.
I say big thanks, Rich, Echo. Very good work. Let's move on to the rent burden conversation. Yes?
Well, I wanted to say that Enjoy worked on it as well.
Enjoy?
Yes.
Because she didn't have anything else to do.
I know. I hate asking her to do anything. I'm a little protective of Joy.
Okay. Yeah.
We love Joy. Linda, you want to jump into the rent burden meeting brainstorming discussion?
Sure. I'll just tee it up. So essentially, the city is required to annually hold some sort of rent burden meeting to address issues of rent burden in the city. what that looks like is not actually very prescribed, but some of it has to do with doing some public outreach. And so the consultant for the housing production strategy felt like we could also combine some community outreach efforts with this rent burden meeting that we would normally do actually in November, because it's due to the state by December. So we've done a couple different things in the past. Last year, we didn't really do a whole lot. I should also mention that while it's written into the state statute that we address rent burden, they have nothing that compels us to do it. And there is no, we won't suffer any repercussions for not doing it. But anyway, all that being said, I think it's a good idea to do it. And we haven't had an actual event in a couple of years now. Doing a rent burden meeting this time around, with the idea that it is somewhat related to the housing production strategies, how would we structure that event? And Gina has generously offered to allow us to use the one of the facilities at the Ashland Hills Inn and Suites. I always say it wrong. Is that right? Ashland Hills Inn and Suites. Ashland Hills, whatever.
Ashland Hills Hotel and Suites.
Okay. Because it used to be the Ashland Hills Inn. It was the Ashland Hills Inn for a million years, so that's just what I want to call it automatically. So in the past, we've done a couple of different things, and other cities who do this, including Medford, have done the same things, which is, you know, you convene a panel of experts and then you have an audience and then they can, you know, ask the questions. I think I shared with Echo before the meeting that one of the things that I struggle with always in all of these processes that we undertake is that I want to make sure that whenever we ask people to come and engage in a process and to, you know, give some time and energy and thought to these things, that they aren't just, that we're not just paying lip service to it, that we have some momentum that comes out of it that somehow affects some change. Sometimes that can be very small. I mean, I think hearing from people has value, but doing something with what we hear has probably a lot more value to them than just hearing. So with that in mind, I think, you know, we have talked about trying to make sure that people have time to speak. I've heard that feedback in the past. Sitting and listening to people talk is really not that engaging. We have done other activities in the past at the city to gain public input that is more, I don't know how to say it, but is more interactive, such as tabling, where we break out into small groups and focus on specific topics. So, I mean, I think we could take this in a lot of different directions. What are your guys' thoughts and feelings about how best to create a platform where people can talk about this topic, feel like their time and energy has value and is valued by us, and that we come out with something that is actionable?
So FYI, we're talking about doing this at our July meeting. No.
Sorry. So we're going to do it in August. So we do have some time to plan. And I'm sorry, I should have said that. We did initially start out with the July meeting. And it looks like the memo I included somehow has that, because it's the old memo. Uh-oh. Sorry. So no, you do have August 20th. Well, why do I have the old one? Okay.
No, I had August 25th because I blocked the date.
Okay. Yes. So I'm sorry about this memo. So it is August 25th is going to be the date. So the good thing about this planning effort is that we know what day it's going to happen. We know what time it's going to happen, and we know where it's going to be. All we have to do is create what it is. That's the easy part, right? Okay. Chris, sorry.
Do we have the space to maybe have a breakout session or two, maybe with Fair Housing to speak in, some other partnerships and some folks being able to provide that information and resources.
Gina, what do you think? So we could do it in a room, right, where we have tables in one room. Like, Gina, we've been in that one room that's in the basement, and that's pretty large enough that people could space out. But I'm sure the other rooms.
Last time we had a panel discussion, and we were actually upstairs at the end room in the Andromeda, and we had theater style set up, and then people were on a panel. I think what you brought up earlier was to have tables and table discussions. So if we had a bigger room, because the ballroom was, we were in a part of it. So if we were in a bigger part of it, and then we had a panel in the front with chairs in the front, and then we could have round tables in the back where people could break out and go and speak to certain individuals that might really, that's their issue, you know? So if I'm a renter, and I think that a lot of times people have a problem with the property management company, you know, what do I do? How do I, is there a cap on it? People want to know things like that. So just tell me what you want, and then I'll know how to set the room up for you and whatever you need.
Do we want people in addition to renters? Do we want developers and property managers and landlords there?
You know, in the past, we have had that. We have had a mix. And generally, of the people that we have asked to come to be the sort of professionals that people talk to, because obviously, like, we can't answer those questions, right? Like, we're not property managers. We're not, you know, fair housing compliance officers. I love having a fair housing person. And we have often in the past, because that's a separate issue, right? Like, that happens. We've also had a representative from the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services often, which is that sort of landlord tenant issue stuff, which is great. I think that is great. And they are always really supportive of us doing this. I love the property management thing, and who we've had in the past to answer those questions is the Southern Oregon Rental Owners Association, and they have been always really receptive. Who else? And we had Community Alliance of Tenants. We've had them come in the past too, which is a great sort of catch-all almost for landlord-tenant issues. Who else? What other things do you guys anticipate people might have questions about or want more information about?
Anyone? Chris, Heidi.
So I put on the chat, you know, I think it'd be really great to have the community also find ways to engage. If you know, they're bringing these things up, there's also a way that they can also help us out as well. So I think having that engagement piece would be great, whether it be Humanity, Habitat for Humanity, or Aura, just volunteer wherever we can, because we're always looking for help, right?
That's great. Heidi.
I just looked at my calendar, and August 28th, this is Sunday.
Is 20th. August
20th?
25th. Thursday. It's the date of our August meeting. So I presume it would not be at 4 o'clock. It would be more at 6, 7, something like that.
Well,
we
can change the time if we need to, but we would not have another meeting of this group, and it takes the place of our August meeting for sure. Okay. So, you know, the one good thing about our meeting, I think, is that it kind of bridges that work time into the evening, but we could certainly push it to like 4:30 to 6:30. I know that like too much later, and we, you know, get into people's dinner times, and we're not going to feed them.
Okay.
So one of the other things that we had talked about, I think, Rich, you had mentioned that you really liked the structure of the housing element meeting that we had like a long time ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, where each commissioner, it was a combination of, it was housing commissioners and planning commissioners, I think, who were staffing the tables, and then people could rotate if they wanted, or were they required to rotate? And each table had a topic. So I think having like a fair housing table, Center for Nonprofit Legal Services, but then would one of you also be at that table to sort of record the feedback that you get from people?
Could we have the table set up around topic areas? That may be what you're saying, but I was thinking instead of the organization, just around the issues that people, you know, like what are the top issues that we already know are going to come in the room?
Right.
Chris.
Just one more idea. Is it possible that we can also have a direct fundraising, just, you know, to go to some type of funding to also assist with affordable housing and rent? Ask for donations from the community.
Do you mean I may not understand what you're saying, but here's my thought. The Affordable Housing Trust Fund, I think it can take donations. Not donations,
really?
Property. Well, it can take donations of money.
Property. But you can't donate money, because I wanted to do that.
No, and you was, can donate.
I wanted to donate money, and I was told I couldn't do it because it wasn't set up to take money. It would have to go through some really bizarre, convoluted approval process. And if somebody wanted to donate property, the planning office or somebody had to say that the city wanted it, and it was incredibly cumbersome to make donations.
So I feel like we can take money, but not property.
I was told you can't take money. Well, I asked this years ago.
No, I remember. I remember going through that process. So this is the interesting thing. And maybe this is why I went round and round with it. Because people have donated money to it before. And we have taken their money. And
lately?
Not lately. In about what? Aaron. So we used to have a housing commissioner named Aaron Benjamin. And when he passed away, his wife asked that people could donate to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund in his name. And people did.
I want to do that. Why can't we do that?
Why don't I thought we could? So I'm sorry. And I'm not saying that I don't remember that you and I and Brandon went through this process.
Yeah.
But for some reason in my mind, it was a bequeathment of property, which isn't the same as someone writing a check and giving it to us, because that's what's happened. People have written us a check, and we took that check and gave them a tax ID number that was, I mean, essentially you donated to a nonprofit and you can use this as a tax write-off. So anyway, we don't have to get into that, but I believe, Chris, is that what you were asking? And that's something, I mean, I can try to look into it before the event so that we can have it out there people can do that. What I think we have a hard time with is bequeathments. Like, how do we set it up that upon, you know, your demise, we can accept? I mean, like I said, I've accepted cash, or not cash, checks, but I've never done anything else. And maybe that was a special thing for Aaron.
All right. Seems like bequeathments would be just as easy.
Linda, we had this conversation back in December of 2020. I just found the old email.
Rich? I don't mind having donations. I think it should not come to the Housing Trust Fund at all. And I think we could identify people that are still at the whatever shelter we have left up, or for Habitat for Humanity, or one of those nonprofits. And the reason is that for me, the Housing Trust Fund needs dedicated sources of money. That's taxes. We get it from the marijuana tax, and we want it from the construction excise and other places. It's one of the main focuses of this housing production. But if you tell people, gosh, you could donate a few dollars towards it, it sort of allows people to go like, well, why don't we just allow people to donate to it? Which, I don't know, it's just the money that we need is minimally in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And I'm just, anyway, that's just my thought about if people kind of put it in their mind that we're just going to have donations so we don't need taxes, that would be a bad thing. So give the money, but not to the housing trust fund.
Are you guys feeling like you want Habitat? Because I heard Habitat come up. You want some affordable housing developers to be there. Is that correct?
Sure.
Understanding.
I would like to have property management people there as well as property developers, because I think that it's easy to demonize the people who are not in the room. And I think it's an important conversation for people to hear on both sides. There are human beings with, you know, points of view on both sides, and, you know, civil discourse would be helpful.
I'm feeling like we've done this before and very little came out of it. And I'm confused about how, what we can really offer people. If one of the big sources of rent burden is utilities, the city council, that's sort of their modus operandi, is to raise utility rates for the city when they're short of cash. And I know we're in the middle of dealing with that catastrophe of cash overrun. But without the city councilors there to hear that from people, you know, I don't know what other strategies do we have. So yes, Habitat doing affordable housing, that's great. Property managers, but they have very little control over the actual rent, setting the rent and collecting the rent. Some of the property managers, I used to do this in court, are more amenable to allowing people to gradually pay back what they owe, but there's very little that they can actually do. I don't know.
Gina.
Heidi, you're reading my mind. And I was sitting here thinking that, because that is, you know, it, rent, utilities, or food, what's going to suffer this month, right? And so for me, I already wrote down that I was going to invite the council and the mayor, because I think it's important when our utilities go up 4% every year, you know, and you've already, you haven't even turned the lights on and you've spent $100+. So I believe that because I thought, oh, I'll be there. And I go, nope, I'm going to bring the whole council with me, you know, because it's a collective thing. So I already wrote that down. And when you were talking about tables and things like that, I don't want all of the counselors to be at one table, but I would like for them to be able to go around from table to table, be there for the duration of this event, and be there to answer questions and let our community know why this is happening and what we are going to do about it, not as individuals, but as a council. Because it, you know, it's all of us. It's not just one of us.
So, Linda. I would say that we probably need to do the survey at the event, and that we should highlight, I mean, so Heidi, getting back to what is the outcome is the housing production strategies to create more housing to hopefully bring down rent costs. So I think we'll have to have a little intro about what the housing production strategy effort is, the feedback that we need to get from people because of the outcomes that it will create. And that how we'll do that is by hopefully by having them just take this survey, maybe at each table.
Echo.
So two things. I recently read something, which of course I can't find right at the moment. Some folks in Eugene, I used to live there, so I pay attention to it. Some folks in Eugene are proposing a city, some sort of city regulation to cap rental application fees, which is part of the rent burden in this community. I keep reading horror stories about people putting out the application fee and then they never get the housing, but they're still out the money. It never gets refunded to them. And that I think is an injustice. And then a second thing talking about utilities is that another side of that coin is weatherization. And there are weatherization grants available to property owners, including the owners of rental property, that I wish they were making better use of, because their tenants might have lower utility bills if the properties were better maintained, if windows were replaced, if insulation was upgraded, that sort of thing. And so I think I think there's some responsibility on the side of rental property owners to do that kind of upgrade for the benefit of everybody. So having some weatherization, some information, maybe just flyers, but some information that for landlords and property owners on how to get assistance with weatherization would be great. And it's a climate issue too. Lower utility usage is better for the climate.
I would also like to add in the mobile home parks and the issues that they're facing. There's sort of multiple issues from, you know, the resident ownership and things like that. Because I would like to have those people be present and speak.
Yeah, CASA of Oregon is the group that's working on the purchase of talent mobile estates and turning that into a co-op development.
Okay.
Joy has her hand up and then...
Oh, sorry, Joy?
That's okay. And so does Gina. With regard to Echo talking about that weatherization program, I actually signed up for that. And it's a 2 to 3 year waiting
period. Wow.
Yep.
That sucks.
Joy, but it's there, you know.
Joy, where did you sign up? Did you sign up at Access?
Yes.
Okay. So here's something interesting about, not to preempt, I can't remember, Gina, you were next, not to preempt you. So so there is like the, you know, Access weatherization program, and the weatherization programs fall into a couple of different buckets, right? Like one is owner occupied stuff in mobile homes, manufactured homes. Those are actually easiest, honestly. But then the gray area is rental properties. So the city of Ashland also has its own conservation program that does weatherization. And they often partner with Access. I'm super surprised to find that Access is that far behind, because normally they are like trying to get, they have money that they can't spend and things that they have to do. It's mandated. And I've worked with the weatherization program a lot in the past when I did housing rehab, which was, you know, pretty far in the past. And so there are some limitations to it, but the insulation piece they generally do for free. They can't always do windows. That's a tricky one, especially in old houses with wood and lead-based paint. But the city's conservation program has a 0% interest loan where you would upgrade some systems to meet some energy, whatever star, I think is maybe where we're at, but it's different, has different names now. Requirements, and there's certain appliances that you can get replaced, like your heat and air system. And then Dan Cunningham, who is in our weatherization department, will do an energy audit on your house. He's super knowledgeable. He can come in, he could say, this is where your air leakage is coming from, or like, this is what needs to happen in order to bring down those costs. And then we have a commercial one, which is Larry. So if you guys think there was any value to having information about the different weatherization programs, especially through the cities, which I think is a lot more accessible, mm-hmm. We could provide that. The one thing I think that is hard about the city's program is that for landlords, they're opting to do it, and they don't often, right? That's what we're seeing.
Right.
Is that they could get these things done, but it's just, you know, it's an added thing to them that they may not be seeing the benefit of. But the funny thing is, of course they are, right? Because their property is getting upgraded for a reduced fee, and, you know, they're still getting the same benefit. So I'm not saying they don't do it, but anyway, there's a couple different weatherization angles, and we could bring those people to talk about their programs and including Texas.
We need to move on to our next agenda item. I'm just wondering, Linda, whether it would be helpful to you to have a work group putting this together.
Yeah, that would be great. And we will have time to talk about this again. So we'll come back with like an agenda and a pretty tight list of people and topic areas, maybe. Any takers on that exciting work? Aside from me.
I would love to, and I'm going to be out of town a lot of the next month, so I'm going to wait, but I may be able to sign on by the end of next month.
Okay, great.
Anybody available to help support this?
I'm booked up.
Right, I'm looking around the table, like everybody's kind of booked. So let's look at that again next month, because as we get closer to the event, we may need to you know, step up to the table a little more.
Well, and you'll get what you get if it's just me.
Right. I got it.
Just like in preschool, you get what you get. So don't throw a fit.
Right. Our next agenda item is a proposal from the Social Equity and Racial Justice Commission. And that's you too, Linda.
Yes. I guess going back to the last thing, I did wonder if maybe we wanted to invite us some search people to be a part of the rent burden. Maybe I can talk with Ann about it. So I think some of you will remember a couple of months ago, the search commission was reaching out to the different commissions to, you know, see what work is being done in other commissions so that there isn't overlap. And Gina, you could probably speak better to this because you're the liaison to that commission, but they do have a charge, but they don't have any funding to enact their charge. Whereas we have a plan that we are required to undertake action on. And that plan is the Fair Housing Analysis of Impediments. And we identified some action items in that plan that we have to take action on every year. As a recipient of community development block grant funds, we are required to quote affirmatively further fair housing. Most of what that looks like is by providing education, doing outreach, and then doing the compliance piece, which for us is pretty minimal in the sense that people can come to this commission and talk about fair housing issues that they're experiencing, and then we can help get them to the proper places to hopefully get some compliance, which could include our own legal department for those protected classes that we have that the state and the federal government does not have. So as a part of a list of things that we identified as actions we could take every year, which we have to include in our consolidated annual performance report, we identified several activities, one of which is doing some equity, diversity, and inclusion trainings. And the funding that we would use for this sort of activity is generally CDBG planning. It's called planning and administration money. You guys know that money. as the money that pays me. So that's what I take from this grant to administer the grant. But the other money that CDBG has that we could use for this is the public service money, at which we didn't allocate all of the amount, the full 15% that we could, although we did in fact allocate all the money we had. So the city does also set aside funding in the housing program to do trainings. Mostly it's the money we use to contract with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon to do compliance training and also to address any concerns that come through the hotline that they have. So we have between $1,000 and $3,000, though I actually have to check and see if that money got taken out of our budget and put back into the general fund, because all of our training and any extra money that we had in any of our budgets, every department was required to cut, I think, 5%. So that money may have been in that 5%. I actually don't know. It was in the original budget when it was passed, but since all of these changes have happened, I don't receive updated budgets all the time. I only get the section that pertains to the money I oversee. So, but I do actually have to do this either way. So some way I have to figure it out whether I have some money to pay for it or not. It is required of us. The Social Equity Commission is wondering if this commission, because there are so many things on your plate right now, if we would be willing to let them undertake the activity of organizing this training and then putting it on, and then, you know, we would pay for it out of essentially the funding that I oversee. Normally, it would be this group's responsibility to do organize this training, but we already are organizing a lot of things. So how do you guys feel about that?
I feel supportive of anything that takes more work off your plate. And I also think they're the perfect commission to do that. So I think it's a win-win.
And Linda, this is a training that's required every year?
You know, no. So essentially, you may remember, we adopted an updated analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. Mm-hmm. It's a requirement of our grant funding. And in that, the way that HUD wants those structured now is that they want to see an annual action plan for actions that you will undertake to affirmatively further fair housing in your community. And we created a big list of things. So one of the things was, you know, do an EDI training for elected officials, appointed officials, the public, and like city staff. And obviously, those don't have to be all one training. They can be multiple trainings. So we could do one of those every year over the next 5-year period. We also identified things like Fair Housing Council trainings. You know, like we did a Fair Housing for Shelter Providers training at one point. So we have a variety of activities that we could undertake. We don't necessarily have to pick this one, but we do have to do one thing off of that list of things every year.
So I was just, so the suggestion is we're kind of flipping it over to Surge to do it. And I just, is there a timeline on that?
You know, yes and no. I don't have to have it. We don't have to have the training before we submit the caper to HUD in September. But what we do have to have is a plan for doing it. So what I would write in the caper is for, you know, 2022, the city undertook or will undertake or has scheduled a training to do this at this time. I have to have something in there because one of the reviewers of all of the, you know, had all the reports that we send up get reviewed, and the caper gets reviewed by different entities, one of which is the Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. And they have denied our capers in the past and our consolidated plan because we weren't doing enough. I did have to show that they actually sent me the grid from the city of Portland and said, here's a template for what you should be doing. And I sent them a copy of our allocation. And I said, here's our allocation versus Portland's allocation. And that's why we do what we do and they do what they do.
But let me just ask again. So the requirement from HUD is that this gets done in a timely way. And are we clear that Surge asked for this and they would get it done in a timely way?
Gina, do you want to answer that? I think they want to do it. They asked us to do it.
Yeah, and I do believe that I agree with Rich, the time. You might not have to put a specific time when you do the caper, but I believe you should give Serge a deadline. Okay, we're going to have it done by this date.
I would agree with that, too.
Joy, is it in your intention to have your hand up?
No.
Okay.
Echo. I have mine up.
All right. Echo.
You know, so because I look at social media and I look at that, there's a Facebook group called Ashland Housing where people post their pleas for finding a place to live in this town. And every time I see those letters where people talk about how wonderful they are and why somebody should rent to them, it raises a little flag in my head about fair housing, because it's so easy for somebody who's a landlord, and I don't know how effective these posts are really, but for somebody who's a landlord to go, well, that person looks nice and white and professional and middle class, so I'll rent to them, rather than really having a competitive process that includes everybody. So that worries me. I understand why it's happening, but it's of concern. I think there's some need for Serge, and I'm probably preaching to the choir now, Gina, but I think it would be great for Serge to do some community education to both renters and to property managers about the stuff that Fair Housing Council has taught us about over the years, about what you can and cannot do, and what renters, I think a lot of renters just have given up on the notion of being treated fairly. And so they do these sort of letters of pleading on social media, and it worries me. And then there's the problem of people having Section 8 vouchers, which I can speak to this, having Section 8 vouchers and no place that will rent to them. Another huge problem.
Okay, Gina.
Having Serge Commission there at the Brent Burden meeting, maybe that's something they could speak to. Whomever would like to come there, that's definitely something that they can speak to, and I can bring that up at our meeting.
That would be great. And, you know, the one thing I would say about all of this is that it's always predicated on the funding we have. So, you know, in the past, the Fair Housing Council Board has done most of our trainings. And the reason for that is they get direct funds from HUD to do them for free. So most of the time we are not paying them at all. And that allows us to not have to set aside money. We have paid them in the past. And most of the time we set aside about $3,500 in the housing budget to pay them both for the hotline and for trainings. And that usually gets us 1 to 2 trainings a year. So that kind of shows you how expensive those sorts of things are. I have been in communication with La Clinica. They have a equity, diversity, and inclusion training module that they can do a variety of different things. Brian Lambert is their trainer, and they will give me some costs for that, which I've been talking with Anne about. And then I think the city already had one EDI training, but I can't remember how much that was. So this is really predicated on the funding that I can figure out how much we have in the housing program budget. I don't think I've been really parsing out my CDBG funds, and it looks like, amazingly, for the first time in many years, we have 62 cents. we had a backlog going into the pandemic, and we got a ton of money more. I mean, you know, for us, not compared to Medford or any other city. But we have pretty much expended that over the past few years. And I thought we had a couple $1,000, but I actually think we have 62 cents.
You know, the training that the city had was done by Common Ground, Finding Common Ground, Mike and Kathy Green. And that was $3,000. Not cheap.
All right. So it sounds to me like the consensus of this group is yes to ask Serge to host that training for us. Is that correct? Any objections to that? I don't think you need a motion. I think you're just asking for the sense of the group, right? Heidi.
Just one more thought. Some kind of a little skit at the Rent Burden meeting, you know, with posters or, you know, something that might be really cool if Serge could do something like that. I don't know what the talents are of the people involved with Serge are, but something entertaining and light, but making a point or several points might be a fun way to do a training and get people interested.
It would be great to have the opportunity to promote that training at the August Rent Burden meeting. I'm going to move on because we're near the end of our time to liaison reports, starting with Gina.
Thank you, Linda. Something that was touched on earlier, and Echo said that's my wheelhouse, and it is, looking at the sale of city properties. And I also want you to know that there was this huge list of properties I got, and I thought, oh my God, all these properties belong to the city. Well, no. Only with me, Linda Rapon, only about four of them were on there. However, I went back to the table and I said, okay, tell me about these properties, Joe. What it is that all of the other properties, they belong to Parks and Recs. However, Parks and Recs, they are managing the property. The properties belong to the city. So I was like, Well, so I'm in the process of looking at all of these properties. Some of them on the list, of course, were parks. And that's can't touch that. However, there's several other properties that are on there. So I am going to be looking at these other properties. I'll let anybody know if they want to go with me, get in the car. We're going to go take a drive. Okay, Linda, I will let you know. Also, really quickly, I met with Dolores over at Wingspread. And I know that many of you have been looking at what a scary possibility that if the owner decided to sell the property. Dolores has a beautiful home. That's a true community. Even the goose, they're the gaggle of goose. They're all there hanging out. So what I did is I reached out to Joanne Hardesy. She is a counselor. This woman is on fire, you guys, in Brooklyn and in Portland. And we are going to Zoom together. Portland has already done it. Ashland does not have to reinvent the wheel. I asked Joanne to please share that with me. Share that to us. Share that with us. She said she would. I'm going to grab another counselor. We're going to get it on the look ahead so that it could be on the agenda so we could see how we can help our mobile home parks. I mean, my goodness. To have that that you might get thrown out anytime or sell the property. That's what I've been doing. And I just want to thank this body for keeping me very busy. That's all.
You're very fortunate to have you as our liaison from the council. You're amazing. Is it Chris? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something? Go, Heidi.
Am I muted?
No.
Oh, is it true that the Imperatrice property is 840 acres?
Yes, it is. And Heidi, it's huge, but the zoning, we can't touch that. You know, what it's zoned for right now, we would have to annex a great deal of the property that I think is kind of on the north end. And then when you look directly across the freeway, it's beautiful, it's huge. However, what it's zoned for, Heidi, we can't touch it. And then we'd have to annex the North End.
Can it be sold or parts of it be sold?
It can be sold. It can be sold. That's a city surplus property. It can be sold. Selling that property would be awesome, going towards the deficit that the city has. Also, I know that Rogue Valley Mountain Biking is looking at that very seriously, to want to have mountain biking over there. And so my other brain is like, it would be great for tourism and travel, because that's what I do. So we have to see how that pans out. Right now, there are no takers or buyers.
Okay, moving on. SOU, Chris?
Just one thing to report. July the 20th, from 8 o'clock to, looks like, 6 or 7 in the evening, we have lots of folks from Salem coming to SOU to talk about, of course, education, but of course, housing is a part of that. The reason why we have a lot of underrepresented students struggling with education. So you should be interested. I plan on having a public comment, but you're welcome to also attend, listen in, and also feel free to also share your public comments to those folks as well.
Who's sponsoring that?
It's HEC. It's the HEC folks.
Oh, it's HEC.
Yeah.
Higher Education Coordinating Council.
Yeah. But, you know, they're talking about, like, 8 o'clock, we got some community and institutional leader roundtables that's happening. So I'm hoping that some of our city folks are at that speaking opportunity. But if not, you know, there's also a chance to speak with our Salem folks for public comment in the evening.
Well, I did think of one SOU.
I'm sorry.
I did think of one SOU thing, but it just occurred to me. I emailed Linda about it earlier. Sorry, Linda. Other Linda.
Okay. So I was going to say, Chris, if you can get information to that to Linda Reed, she can get it out to us.
Okay. I will do it.
Does anybody know what that in the May Board of Trustees minutes for SOU, there was a paragraph of something presented by Greg Perkinson to the board, their board, our board, I saw our there, who knows, about 3 slivers of land. Linda, do you remember getting that from me? Do you know what that was about?
So I asked Brandon, because I thought if anyone would know, it would be Brandon. He said that it's not city, the city didn't get any properties. It's all probably, as far as he can tell, like public works right of way sort of stuff that just has to be cleaned up, you know.
Okay. I am curious to know what SOU is doing with their surplus property.
Okay, moving on. Oh, wait. Moving on after Heidi talks.
I just have a request that each month we be updated on this, what's happening with emergency shelter. And I'm even willing to be part of a subcommittee to try and make it happen. But it's something's got to be in the works. And I don't know who's doing it or if anybody is doing it. But I'm concerned about it.
Yes.
You know, I bring that. Oh, Gina, you should
speak. Oh, go ahead, Linda.
So, you know, I probably talked to you all before about the process that I have, which is essentially to bring things to my boss, Bill, who is a department head, who then attends the department head meeting weekly with the city administrator, and then brings the things that his staff has, like these are the things that we need to do, and then gets things on the look ahead. So that's the process I have for, you know, moving things forward. And then, you know, the look ahead gets set and things get bumped or things don't maybe sometimes rise up to the level of importance over other things. So I will just continue to push that with Bill. After the city council study session, I did say, you know, we didn't get direction because I think our conversation kind of got derailed by a second pressing topic. And at the end of the council communication for that study session topic was, does the council wish to direct staff to draft a resolution to incorporate all of these recommendations? And they didn't do that. Joe said that even though they didn't do that, that we would still move forward with doing that but I do not know when that resolution will get put on the look ahead. And at that time, then they could deal with the different pieces. There wasn't a lot of pushback at the study session, as you guys may remember, on any of the recommendations that you had. So I don't know that they wouldn't move forward, but they just all need to be put into a resolution, and then it has to get before them for that discussion and adoption piece. So I will keep you updated on when I find out if that's moving forward and when.
Anything else from staff updates?
I have one more question. That memo from May, that outline thing from Joe about emergency sheltering, I'm still confused about what that is and what it means and the million dollars we're supposed to get.
Well, the city did accept the $1 million, which is essentially this, them just saying we accept the grant. And then Joe has a process for making a recommendation to move that forward to the council for consideration, which included the feedback that you all provided via email. I did meet with Joe and provide him that feedback that you provided to inform the development of this council communication that he will bring forward. So I think he's bringing together some additional pieces, but other than that, I don't really have information about when that will move forward to the council or what that finished product would look like.
And at that meeting on the council, the decision was from the financial people to put it in the housing trust fund. And everybody agreed it would go in the housing trust fund. I sat there and watched it. Did that actually happen? And it go in? They said it can't go anywhere else but the housing trust fund. When I watched that, and so I just was thinking, our housing trust fund might have $1 million plus, and it has, because it goes in that housing trust fund, it has sort of administrative requirements.
You know, I am not sure that is entirely accurate. I did hear Allison Chan say it will be put in the housing trust fund, and I don't know if she really, that's what she meant to say, or if she meant to say, what I was told is that it was going to go into the housing program budget and not have the restrictions that the housing trust fund has, because we can use it in any way. And so, but when she said that, I was a little surprised, but.
Well, I would just say, just as somebody that watches that, just somebody that watches it carefully, to our city council representative, is that when the city council and the administrators say that, and then it goes somewhere else, that's a little bit of non-transparency in my mind. And I know they want to not put it in there because it actually has really good administrative rules rather than using it as a slush fund. So that's just my own feedback to whoever hears it.
The accounting department told me to not use the word slush fund anymore.
Yeah, they don't want to do that, but that's
anyway. Thank you, Linda. So I was told that when Allison said it was going to sit there, because that was the only right place for that $1 million to be. So am I hearing that now it's not there?
Oh, it probably really is there. I mean, here's the other thing, that there's the accounting piece of the accounting department only has so many line items to accept things. And so they're going to put things in a line item that makes sense. And I don't have in the housing program, I don't have a line item for that, like for grant money received from the state. So they would have to go back through a process to create a new one, like we did with the emergency shelter grant funding. So, I mean, it's almost like an accounting bureaucracy thing that meets their accounting standards. So I totally got that she said, this is where it has to go. But my understanding of it was that they didn't intend for it to be used in the way that we use the housing trust fund, that we would put this $1 million out through an RFP process, not this year, but next year. And then people would apply for it in the way that they would apply for housing trust fund money. with all of the same priorities and, you know, requirements. It isn't to say that they won't do it that way or that they couldn't do it that way. I just didn't, I didn't understand that that's what they wanted to do at the onset.
Okay, thank you.
All right, folks, we're out of time. Any general announcements, any events coming up you want to make sure people know about other than the ones that have been marked here? I just want to say it is such a joy to serve on a commission where people really shoulder the load and do work. I just that I'm very proud of us. And thank you, especially to those of you who are doing incredible amounts of work. And I bow to you, Joy. You're doing it.
Well, for real, you know, but I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You are very much appreciated on this commission.
Thank you.
So thank you, everybody. Our next meeting is July 28th, still Zooming. And then on August 25th, is that what we said? We will do an in-person event with the public. So thanks, everybody. And we are adjourned.
Happy Friday, Beeps. Bye.